Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the television show English Teacher. And before I go any farther, I want to acknowledge the concern I have with even talking about this FX program to you. Although the show is clearly pro-gay, which we love, it is also most definitely anti-woke, which we despise. And I worry about two things that even mentioning it as to cancel it. First, perhaps you become aware, you watch it, and you're lured into its very clever comedic commentary on our religion. Do not be tempted to watch it, dear Otherin. Second, by centering the program around an openly gay teacher who consistently challenges the basic tenets of our faith, this program gives the impression that it's possible to be a person of the rainbow and yet also not fully embrace the full orthodoxy of the holy acronym string about social justice, diversity, systemic racism, and the like. We most certainly do not want people starting to think they can pick and choose which of our doctrines to accept and which to reject. Groupthink is our most holy sacrament, which is why we despise comedy and satire, since they raise the danger that our congregants might actually start thinking for themselves with disastrous results. With those cautions in mind, consider a recent episode in which the main character, Evan, suddenly discovers to his chagrin that he was in fact a DEI hire as a gay Latino man rather than hired purely for his qualifications.
Evan, I actually see your point here, man. Like the way you're always banging the DEI drum, I get it, man. I'd do the same thing if it got me this job.
Wow, very funny, Marky, very funny.
I ain't joking.
Wait, you're legitimately suggesting that I was a diversity hire?
Nah, I mean, it's just like a rumor I heard.
Notice how he starts to question his faith after a conversation with his conservative coach friend, Marky. This is precisely why the 51st Edict of Wokeism reminds us that those who associate with Gaia Femers and Woketics will always be tempted to question their own faith in time. This is why we say not to be friends with conservatives, ever. Far too risky.
What's going on, Evan?
You know what I've never asked? That's so random. It's like, was I a DEI hire? Oh my God. I'm a diversity hire?
Despite being a staunch advocate of preferential hiring, Evan had failed to realize how insulting DEI hiring practices are for the people who benefit from them. And once he realizes this, he sets out to tell his students to not try to get into better colleges through using veiled DEI references in their application essays. The episode, in fact, virtually demands the viewer ask themselves why we don't tell students and employees who benefit from DEI that they are such beneficiaries. And obviously, it's because it would be devastating to them and ruin their reputation with the student body or the workers and their self-esteem. But look, the basic insult of diversity programs, or what we used to call affirmative action, is really central to what we want to have happen. When a woman, a minority, or an LGBTQ3M*GTU gets a job, we want them to not think they did it on their own, but instead owe everything to the great and wonderful system of social justice we have created to benefit them. This indebtedness and gratitude is a feature, not a bug, of the system. We want them to believe they cannot do anything on their own without our benevolent lordship over them. That's how you create an obedient population. You make them feel they're unworthy and incapable without your lavish generosity toward them. We don't want rugged independence. We want unrugged dependence. And for making people think about this benefit as somehow being an insult to their dignity and worth, English Teacher must be canceled. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we want to say something that I know will trouble you greatly, but hear me out. We want to commend United States Secretary of Non-Peace Pete Hegseth, as this week the Pentagon followed through on its deadline for reporters to either agree to a series of restrictions on their journalism or else surrender their press credentials. The most brilliant of these restrictions was the requirement that any information published must first be approved by an appropriate authorizing official, even if it contains only unclassified information. In other words, Pentagon reporters would have to submit their stories on the military to the military itself for approval prior to publication, meaning the news media would essentially become PR arms of the Pentagon. Now, dear Otherin, I know, with all the concerns you have about the future of our nation, and especially the devastating impact being inflicted upon her by President Never Say His Name, It might seem like keeping a free press would be a good thing, especially now. But don't you see? If this administration can so directly attack the long-standing ability of the press to tell the citizens what the civilian-led military is doing, then just imagine what we can do with that kind of anti-transparency when we get in power. The capacity we will have to shape culture through the Ministry of Truth and Propaganda will be awesome. And the other side won't even be able to raise an objection because they will have been the ones who did it first. Just think what we can get away with if we don't have to worry about pesky independent journalists doing their jobs. We can stay in power forever and do virtually anything we want to bring about the perfect woketopia. And the fact that every single news outlet other than one has protested this change is proof of its rightness. It will be everything St. Orwell predicted. And to think that it will have been none other than a former Fox News host who became Secretary of Anti-Peace, who paved the way for us with this wonderful policy of state-driven media censorship. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to express our deepest admiration for the outstanding work being done in the United Kingdom. Although, obviously, we oppose kingdom, monarchy, we believe in No King's Day, and we certainly wouldn't celebrate anything that's built as a patriarchy, which by definition a kingdom is. But putting all of that aside, the UK has really done something wonderful recently. They've instituted a broad array of restrictions on the marketing of unhealthy foods. These new regulations, which control product placement in convenience stores for soft drinks, chocolate, ice cream, cereal, pizza, potato chips, what they call crisps, and processed meats like hamburgers and chicken nuggets. These foods and others are no longer allowed to be placed at shop entrances or on the end caps of aisles because the mentally weak consumers will be tempted to eat their way down the path of type 2 diabetes just because of the tempting location of these dangerous foods. In addition to restrictions on product point of exposure, the UK has also instituted a ban on price promotions and multi-buy offers such as buy one, get one free specials, BOGOs, for those deadly almost food items. Thus, the headline-grabbing slice of this new law completely prohibits free refills on sugary sodas and lemonade. That's right, no more soft drink free refills anarchy in the UK. Of course, the impetus for these reforms is to prevent diabetes and its costs, which run into the billions of extra pounds caused by the patients with the extra pounds enjoying the wonderful state-run socialized medicine program. But we also know that the other massive benefit to implementing food and drink codes on the citizens is that this is precisely how you cultivate the formation of a religion. Food, as you know, is the very center of what defines people groups, alongside language, attire, and sports. And if you want to foster a sense of cultural identity, you direct people to eat certain foods and in certain ways. Not only does this bond the similar eaters together, but it also creates a barrier of contempt towards outsiders who do not practice the same food habits. Every religion is defined by its forbidden foods and what it eats at its major celebrations. This is basic sociology. Crafting strict rules on what words to use, how to dress, how to play, and what to eat. This is how we fabricate a society devoted to our beliefs. Why else do you think we spend so much time as the food Pharisees advocating for cage-free meat or even meat alternatives like bean curd or insects? Specific kinds of drinks like herbal tea or wheatgrass and organic everything. Food conformity is a vital element of any successful religion, and ours is no different, praise Gaia. But this is why we actually want to see the UK do even more. Go farther. Don't just try to reduce the advertising of some foods or cut down on the volume a Brit might easily consume. Ban them altogether. The freedom to eat anything you want is a liberty no successful cultural revolution can allow. Besides, if the healthcare costs of treating diabetes-related problems are so high, it's perfectly justified to help people cut themselves off from their most tempting food sins. What better way for the government to take over their lives for their benefit than by deciding which foods are so dangerous they may not be purchased at all, let alone in a BOGO? And just think how grateful everyone will be as they live longer, healthier lives, undistracted by the unwanted pleasures of the flesh, such as food that tastes better than licking a fence post. The Brits already have a good start with some of the least tasty food on the planet. Well, now they can just go the extra kilometer and make it all healthy, and usher in the tasteless revolution of longevity through pleasure denial. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.